The votes are in for one of the most divisive elections in U.S. history. But is the fight for the White House just getting started? I'll ask this week's headliner, former Republican Congressman Jack Kingston. And in the arena, we'll ask whether Trumpism is here to stay. Kingston, thank you for joining me on Upfront. As you and I are speaking right now, there are still some votes in some key states that are still being counted. But Donald Trump says he already won. As early as Wednesday morning, he declared that he had won. Obviously, that is not true. The votes have not been counted. He also tweeted they are finding Biden votes in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. That's not true. That is a lie. Counting votes is the way the process goes. That is not stealing, as he has said. So, Jack, why is the president of the United States calling counting votes stealing?
I think that the president has made it very clear he wants all legally cast votes counted, period. If they miss the deadline, if the form isn't filled out right, by law, they should not be counted. So I think the president is saying, listen, we just want the legal votes counted.
No, he said that they're finding votes. Counting votes means that the lead may go back and forth. That's how counting works. That's how a basketball game goes. So why is he calling it stealing?
Well, here's what happens. Well, did he say they were stealing?
Or yes.
Did he say they
yes.
Counted in votes?
No, he's used the word stealing in multiple texts, in multiple tweets, pardon me.
I think that the issue has been every time there's post-election counting, mysteriously, it's always Democrat votes that are found. I don't know why it works that way. We saw three
post-election. Oh, no, hold on a second. What do you mean post-election counting? It's just counting.
Post-election means after the election is over several days. For example, in 2018,
Jack, hold on. I want to stick with this election. Right now, they're still counting ballots that came in. Some are in-person ballots and ballots that came in by election day. What is the problem with counting those votes?
In order to answer your question, I'm going to have to give you a historic reference. What is the problem with that? There's not one. So it's very important for you to understand. In 2018, we lost three congressional races in California after the election. 10 days afterwards, as votes were found, suddenly they showed up, and the Republicans who finished election night after the count were on top, but 10 days later, they were lost. That's why it is important to understand what happened in 2018, and that's what the president is referring to, that here we are.
So hold on. No, wait. So why isn't, as opposed to casting aspersions on the entire process, he could litigate that certain thing. We're not going to litigate that. What I'm saying is this has been going on for a while. Wait, hold on, Jack. Hold on. This has been going on for a while, that for weeks the president has been trying to question the integrity of the election process, even before voting started. Does that not trouble you that the president of the United States has talked about the election that way? If this were happening in another country, the U.S. would be wagging their finger saying this is not how you conduct a democracy.
Well, perhaps you need to be reminded that the Biden administration, this is a fact, was spying on the Trump administration in 2016. In 2017.
No, I don't need to be reminded of that, because that's not true and that's not what the question is.
It absolutely is an answer to the question. It's just that you don't like the answer. Here's the reality. Obama spied on President Trump's election.
No, Jack, we're not going to do that. We are not going to do that. This is one of the most significant elections of our lifetime. I want to talk about this election. And the simple question is this, why not, Jack?
Okay. You don't lose your narrative if I answer your question.
I don't have a narrative. I have a question. And the question simply is, why can't we count all of the votes? Then if you want to litigate and have lawsuits, do so. But why would the president of the United States simply respect the electoral process? This is not about past baseless allegations. I'm talking about right now.
I don't think we have any argument counting legal votes. There's no dispute about that. Where we are concerned is when signatures don't match, when ballots show up in the dark of the night, unexplained, oh, here's a box of 200 ballots. Well, where did they come from? Nobody seems to know. That, by the way, is happening in Savannah, Georgia, my hometown right now. So those are the irregularities that we are concerned about. Saying that ballots who are past the legal postmark can be counted, we are concerned about that. Listen, I am on the ground. This is my home city, Savannah, Georgia. I know exactly. I'll give you another example. A woman in Bibb County, Macon, Georgia. Already voted. She has not. And again, these are facts. The problem is you guys always want to make Donald Trump anything he says bad. Did you challenge Hillary Clinton when she said to Joe Biden a month ago?
This is 2020. No, we're not doing Hillary Clinton. We're talking about this election. Let me ask you this. There are some states where the supporters and where Donald Trump says keep counting. There's other places where he's saying stop counting. What actually is the strategy post-election?
We just want to make sure that all the legal ballots are counted and they're done in the proper manner. I'm going to give you an example. Signature matches on absentee ballots are very important. It's not just a matter of counting it, it's just what you count. And if the signatures aren't matching, then you got to put the vote in a question mark.
And those are why monitors are there from both parties.
Yes, but in Philadelphia, as you know, as somebody who's been watching this, our monitors were not allowed inside until we brought a lawsuit and finally got the judge to agree with us today about that. The law in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, as you know, says that all ballots have to have a postmark by 8 o'clock on election night, but a court flipped that decision. We're going through the legal process of appealing that decision. How a court can decide something that the legislature has already passed just because they don't like it doesn't make any sense. So that's the right of appeal, and that's the sort of thing that we're doing.
So I still want to drill down on this one other thing. Are you concerned about the way the president of the United States talks about the election? Does that not concern you?
I don't know why the press is making a big deal about that. No, it does not concern me.
Why?
It does concern me.
We're not making a big deal about it. The president of the United States has been trashing the election process for weeks. If this happened in another country, we would not say it was okay.
If you will yield the floor for 20 seconds.
Go ahead, sir.
Did you have the same outrage when
Hillary Clinton did not use the same rhetoric. No, Jack, I'm not going to let you do that. She did not use the same rhetoric that Donald Trump was. Do you want me to read all of his tweets?
Can I just have my 20 seconds?
Okay, yes, sir.
Give me 10.
Go ahead.
And I promise you, Hillary Clinton told Joe Biden not to accept the results of this election regardless. That bothers me. Now, maybe she could say it more smoothly than Donald Trump said it, but she still said it. So don't act like the rough
you're boiling this down to just a matter of style. No, it's a lot more than that. What Donald Trump's rhetoric, it is incendiary. It is not just a difference in style between the two.
Well, then you certainly would admit with me and agree that the violence and the rioting in America have been caused by the left wing, Antifa in Portland and Seattle, Chicago, City. That's who's throwing bricks through windows and looting.
I'm still trying to. You keep pivoting to all these other issues that have nothing to do with what I'm trying to ask you. No. The protests over the summer, riots is your term. The protests over the summer, that's not about what I'm asking you right now.
Burning cars and buildings,
let me ask you just one last question, Jack, all right? If Donald Trump loses, and as you and I are speaking, we don't know, okay? But let's just say that he does. Does he not owe it to fellow Americans, to voters, to stop attacking them and actually be conciliatory and try to unite the country? That happened even in 2000 with the cases that went all the way to the Supreme Court between Bush v. Gore. Does the president of the United States owe it to chill out on Twitter and just unite the country?
Yes, I do not want him to follow Hillary Clinton's example from 2016.
You've got to stop that, Jack. It's not the same, and you know it's not.
It is absolutely.
It is absolutely not the same. One more question. Let me ask you again very, very simply. Jack.
Do you believe the Russian hoax was true?
Jack, we're not doing this. I'm going to ask you one more time. Would you like for the president of the United States to try to unite the country? That's a simple question.
If I can finish it.
No. If you can, this is a yes or no. Would you like the president of the United States to unite the country even if he loses?
Do not do what Hillary Clinton did with Russia hoax and spying on the other campaign. Don't drag through the country.
Jack Kingston, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us on Upfront. Thank you.
The polls have been closed in the United States for days, but the fight for the Oval Office continues as President Donald Trump tweets, "Stop the count." And Democrats insist on counting every last vote. Joe Biden is currently in the lead, but even if Donald Trump leaves the White House, will Trumpism continue to dominate American politics and over the past 4 years divided the United States beyond repair? Joining me to debate this are Jill Filipovic, a lawyer and journalist and author of the book OK Boomer, Let's Talk, How My Generation Got Left Behind. Reid Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project and former political strategist for George W. Bush and John McCain. And Brianna Joy Gray, former national press secretary for Bernie Sanders and co-host of the podcast Bad Faith. Thank you all for joining me on Upfront. Brianna, I want to start with you. As we are speaking right now, Joe Biden is in the lead, right? But some on the left are shocked that it is even this close. What was your reaction when you saw that at least 68 million people voted for Donald Trump? Why do you think the race has been so close?
Yeah, well, what's frustrating for the left, if I may be so bold as to speak for some cohort of us, is that the argument for a Joe Biden candidacy was all about his electability. Very few people understood or believed that there was some intrinsic value in this person who was in many ways more of the far right members of the Democratic Party cohort in the primary, right? It was a very large field, and maybe one or two people were to Joe Biden's right, but he wasn't perceived as really representing the overwhelming interest of the Democratic Party per se. But he was perceived to be, and very much pushed by the media, to be the most electable candidate. So when it turned out that he has barely managed to win by the skin of his teeth, it really throws into perspective whether or not we were right to give up universal health care, single-payer health care, which, according to a Fox News poll, 70% of Americans support, whether we were right to give up college debt cancellation, give up a robust Green New Deal, which majority of these Americans support.
Can I stop you for just a moment, though?
Yeah, of course.
Was this election even really about policy? Donald Trump had no policy. Was this not about an up or down vote on Donald Trump?
Well, I think that it was definitely pushed that way, and that's part of why we see such disastrous down-ballot results, right? People did not actually feel as inspired about these candidates as they might otherwise have. And in the midst of a global health pandemic, where 12 million Americans just lost their employer-based insurance, when 30 to 50 million Americans are facing eviction and eviction moratoriums are lifting all around the country, I think a lot of Americans are wishing that there was much more of a policy focus in the Democratic primary, because policy absolutely does matter.
Okay, so Jill, let me put this question to you. Yes, policy matters were it not an election with Donald Trump on the ballot, right? The issues that Brianna raises are very legitimate issues, and they were discussed in the primary, and we're going to come back to those. But was this not an up or down vote on Donald Trump, and why do you think more than 68 million people still voted for him?
Yeah, this was not a policy election. The Republican Party didn't even publish a new platform this year. They just released a statement essentially saying, we're repeating 2016's platform, and we pledge fealty to our dear leader. So the idea that Americans didn't get out to vote because they weren't offered the kind of progressive policies that I honestly would love to see in place, I think is a bit divorced from the facts. Joe Biden has secured millions more votes than Donald Trump. He is projected to win the popular vote by a huge margin. What's at issue is a few thousand votes in a few states because of our fundamentally undemocratic electoral college system. So I think the idea that voters just weren't given what they wanted policy-wise, it's not supported by the facts. This was very much an election that was about personal kind of identity. Which party do you feel like speaks to you, represents you culturally? Not necessarily what particular issues do you want to see either of these parties push in the future, because Trump wasn't offering a single policy position. Voters were instead rejecting Trump, and then, as you see down ballot, occasionally voting for Republican congressmen and senators, which really does suggest this was a referendum on the president and not a referendum on any particular policy issues, as much as I wish that wasn't true.
Okay, so let me put that to Reed. Reed, you're the co-founder of the Lincoln Project, a group of anti-Trump Republicans, in some case former Republicans. You raised tens of millions of dollars to put out some ads that were really popular this particular political cycle. Did those ads work? Because your ads not only targeted Donald Trump, your premise is the whole party, the whole Republican Party needs to be burned to the ground and start over. That's not really what happened.
Well, those are two of the different things you're talking about. One is, I think we targeted the president, and we targeted him directly and personally because we saw that up until this point, no one had laid a glove on him when it came to attacking him. This was not a policy argument. This isn't going to be a policy argument, you know, for the next 24 hours or however long it takes to make sure that Joe Biden is declared president-elect. This was about Donald Trump. And when I think about, you know, the Democratic primary going back over, you know, almost 2 years, the one thing that didn't come up in those debates was Donald Trump. It's always been about him. He's the worst president of the United States in the history of the country, probably. 250,000 Americans or so are going to be dead in the next week or so. And so it's always been about him and his failures. Our ads made sure that people understood, one, what it was he is, and two, we wanted to throw him off his game. And from the time that Joe Biden was the presumptive nominee until his campaign, was ready to enter the fray, you know, fully, you know, when he accepted the Democratic nomination, we made sure that he was off kilter about the COVID, about China, about his own health, about his children, and about, you know, the racial animus that he has just
fed.
So do
you think you reached,
you know, in this country?
Do you think you reached Republicans with that message?
Well, look, first of all, y'all don't need to shake your heads at me because I'm not done talking. Second, I would say that, you know, we would say that, you know, the ads that we ran, and please don't roll your eyes at me either. I'm not being rude to you. Don't be rude to me. I would say this is that, you know,
you very recently are being rude, Sarah.
Brianna, Reed, Jill, let me just, this is a debate. It's a healthy debate where we're all allowed even to interject from time to time. Let's just be cordial to each other. But go ahead, Reed.
So no, what I would say is that, you know, the vast majority of the work we did vis-a-vis voters was done in places like Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin and Arizona. We made a massive investment into the African-American community in Pennsylvania to the tune of almost $2 million. We understood early on, probably in late September, that North Carolina and Florida were going away from us and going towards Donald Trump. And so we pulled our resources out of there and we put them into Pennsylvania. We put them into Wisconsin. We put them into Georgia and to Arizona. And so what I would say is that the vast majority of what we get attention for is going after the president, putting him on the defensive, cutting off his axes of attack on Joe Biden and going into those places where we need to move 3 or 4% of Republicans. Let me just say this. No one's going to be more surprised. No one was more surprised than me at just how deeply and broadly Donald Trump has not only affected the Republican Party, but how he was able to drive turnout among it. Look, I'm the first person to admit that I thought that tens of millions of more Americans would repudiate him. No one is more upset about the fact that they didn't than me. And so I think that we have a lot to talk about in this country. And I hope that both Jill and Brianna and I, you know, in another setting, are able to sit down and talk about the things that we need to do in this country to figure out how we go forward.
So, Jill, let's talk about Donald Trump said that he wanted to take this to the Supreme Court. The Trump side has filed a lawsuit in Michigan. They want a recount in Wisconsin. They want votes to stop in some places, to keep going in other places. Are any of these legal challenges likely to be successful? Should they be taken seriously?
I think right now it's a bit too early to tell. The Trump team has been really building up a very sophisticated, very moneyed, very prepared legal challenge to this election. The good news is the Democrats have done the same. There are lawyers all over the country on both sides in every state very prepared to take this to the mat. You know, I think in terms of which of these cases will have legs, which ones are actually going to be supported. It's simply, unfortunately, too early to tell. You know, I think Georgia just threw out one of these lawsuits. So it seems like so far the Trump team hasn't had huge successes challenging the vote counts. Like you say, sometimes wanting them to be counted in places where they think that's beneficial, other times wanting to end the count. You know, they're really using the courts just to try to, again, rig the game in their favor. And I'm hopeful that despite a real right-wing takeover of the federal judiciary, that everyone can really see what's happening here and that judges will maintain, hopefully, their independence and really cut off this effort to rig the game in their favor.
So, Brianna, let me ask you, how much confidence do you have in how the courts and the judges will handle these lawsuits?
Yeah, first, I just want to respond to the idea that the facts militate against the idea that policy and progressive policies would have helped down ballot. In Florida, we did see the state pass a $15 minimum wage, something that
Brianna,
was part
Brianna.
Of Joe Biden's agenda that he frankly did not emphasize very much.
Okay, so
So
back to the question that I asked, what are your thoughts on how the court is going to handle this barrage of lawsuits?
I don't have very high expectations of the court's willingness to be faithful here. I think that Donald Trump has done an enormously successful job of stacking not just the Supreme Court, but the appellate courts, the federal bench in its totality in his favor, and that his legal team has proved itself assiduous, and he is going to fight this tooth and nail to the very end. Part of why we needed to have more of a landslide victory here is that everyone predicted that Donald Trump was going to try to force this election to stage a coup, if you will.
Jill, you mentioned something earlier that was in my notes, and I'm glad you brought it up. We need to talk about the Electoral College, right? It is dated. Some would say it is damaging to democracy. It is not now uncommon for someone to win the popular vote, you lose the Electoral College. Is it time to do away with it?
Yes, it is so far beyond time to do away with it. A Democratic candidate has won the majority of the popular vote in 7 of the last 8 elections. And yet we have not had a Democratic president in office for 7 of the last 8 presidential terms. In America, we like to think about one person, one vote. It's sort of this foundational myth of how our democracy works. It's not actually how our democracy works. And I do think Democrats really underestimate kind of how easy, frankly, the sales pitch for getting rid of the Electoral College is because of how we do understand democracy in the U.S. And, you know, if Republicans had the kind of track record Democrats have with the Electoral College, with the popular vote, the Electoral College would have been gone, you know, a decade ago. So it's beyond time. It should be on the top of the Democratic agenda. You know, obviously, if the Senate is Republican, it's going to be hard for Joe Biden to get much of anything done.
Okay.
But this is one issue that is like a 5-alarm fire for Democrats.
Brianna, do you see it that way?
Yeah, I agree. And it's very frustrating that after the colossal loss that was 2000 and the extent to which so many conversations revolved around electoral reform, there hasn't been more progress on that score, even when Democrats have been in power. As a Black American who understands that the roots of the Electoral College were in considering my ancestors 3/5 of a person for vote counting reasons, I'm deeply invested in getting rid of it.
All right. And Reed, you, where do you and the Lincoln Project stand on the Electoral College?
I don't know. I would say this, is that it's, you know, the Constitution was made to be changed if it needed. And if we can convince enough people in this country to amend the Constitution, then the American people will amend the Constitution. I think it's an argument that has to be had in a way that makes everybody feel like, I think Jill said, that everybody has their voice. But if it's going to descend into a...
Hold on. Is it concerning to you, though?
Is it concerning? Well, look, I mean, it's one of those things that's like, it's concerning.
And Brianna is right,
like,
about the racist
was worried
history
about
of
the,
it.
There's no question about it. Look, that's the thing about the Constitution. The guys who wrote it, most of them were slave owners, right? So there is an original sin that goes back to the beginning of the Republic, right? The thing that we need to do is figure out, I think very much to Brianna's point, is how we make those things, you know, less damaging to Americans today and more equitable from a voting perspective. The Electoral College can be done away with. But we're going to have to convince Americans, not only in Los Angeles and New York City, but also in Des Moines and Duluth, that it's in their best interest to have that happen.
And that will be the final word. Reid Galen, Jill Filipovic, and Brianna Joy Gray, thank you so much for joining me in the arena. That is the show for this week. Upfront, we'll be back next week.